Winter is just about here. It snowed in Anchorage this morning, and as it gets colder, your heating bills are going up. The good news is we have state programs to help pay for energy efficiency in Alaska, programs that can save you money. I'm Charles Woolforth, filling in for Steve Heimel. I have guests today who can help you keep warm this winter and feedback from rural Alaska, where the high cost of energy is a matter of survival. The topic is energy efficiency on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik, provimaging.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, it's a perfect day to be talking about energy efficiency, at least here in Anchorage, where it's cold and somewhat raw outside. And I'm sure as you go farther north, it gets chillier. And so we're all hearing our furnaces heat up and whatever form of energy we're using, which I realize is different all over the state. But we all need to save as much of it as we can. Turning down the thermostat only goes so far. So you can only put on so many sweaters. So our topic today is how to get greater energy efficiency. In other words, how to make sure your heating dollars go as far as possible. And we live in Alaska, and the state government has some programs to help with that. So we're going to be learning about those programs and hopefully giving you some practical advice on what you can do to keep your home warm. We'll be interested in your questions. You can call in here to Talk of Alaska. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. Statewide, it's toll-free, 1-800-478-8255. And you can reach us on email at talkofalaska@alaskapublic.org. So I have two guests in the studio, Sean Scaling from the Alaska Energy Authority. Thanks for being here, Sean.
Great to be here, Charles. Thanks.
And Bob Breen from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Bob?
Thank you for the invite.
And Sean, this is Energy Awareness Month. And I know your organization offers help to Alaskans. And, you know, what's the sort of the view, the top level view of what people can be doing or what help they can be accessing right now?
Yeah, so you're right. October is Alaska Energy Awareness Month. The governor just passed a proclamation declaring it such. It's about the third year in a row we've done this. And the idea is just to get the word out about all the things that people can do on energy efficiency. And in fact, there are five tips that we're starting with. Would you like to hear those already?
Yeah, let's have the top level. Yeah.
Great. So the things that folks can do range from everything from very small things that'll just take a minute or two to more elaborate things. And they are use more energy efficient lighting, install or use a setback thermostat, check your hot water temperature, set it at 120, not below, but not at like 140 where it's wasting energy. And use Energy Star appliances, especially where you're changing out appliances, and get an energy audit, both home and business, to identify the savings potential and then implement them.
Mm-hmm. And how much can you save? You know, when I switched over, it's been a while now, but switched over my whole house from incandescent to the energy efficient light bulbs, it mm-hmm. seemed to me that I had a substantial reduction in my electric bill. I mean, how much money? I think we kind of think about these things as being, oh, that's sort of nice, motherhood and apple pie, but it's actually significant money that you can save, right?
Yeah, it sure is. At the home front, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and Bob will probably talk more about this, they're seeing energy savings of a third off the bills on average. For our commercial energy audits that we've seen, we're seeing the same results, the identified potential of saving a third cost effectively. So this isn't just throwing a bunch of money at it to save it. It's using money to save even more money.
Right. And your biggest, for the homeowner, your biggest cost element, obviously, is your heating bill here in Alaska.
Yeah, that's right.
So the setback thermostat is a way of simply using less energy, whether or not your house is super energy efficient or not. You don't need to be keeping it hot at night. Is that sort of the idea?
Yeah, at night, or if everybody's gone during the day at set times, you can have it set back then. The formula to get into how much energy you're using is all about the difference in temperature inside to outside, and then some other variables like how much insulation you have. So if you can reduce that difference in temperature, you'll be better off and use less energy.
Right. So you program it to be cool when you're in bed and cool when you're at work, and then to warm up when you're getting up in the morning and mm-hmm. when you're there in the evening. Yeah. And the thermostat costs you?
They're relatively inexpensive.
Less than $100, certainly.
Yeah, certainly.
And installation is like 15 minutes. I mean, at least it didn't take me long.
Yeah, it's really quick. And then, you know, a lot of people have programmable thermostats, but they've never taken the effort to program them. So that's one request that we have this year. If you have one, just take a few minutes and learn how to program it. It's actually not really programming. It's just, you know, telling it what temperature you want when.
You need a 12-year-old for that, though, right?
That's right, yeah.
People over the age of 12 can't handle this kind of technology, I've noticed.
Yeah.
But that points to a thing. It's behavior is part of what you're trying to deal with, not just facilities, right?
Yeah, you know, that's right. Behavior and facilities. The thing I really like, though, is there are opportunities like this where it's one behavior. You set your thermostat, and then it does it by itself. And so then you don't have to have the daily behavior of turning it down, turning it up, turning it down, turning it up. And it's comfortable when you get home. You can set it to, you know, be warm by the time you wake up or come home. And so I really like the equipment aspects of it because you don't necessarily have to give anything up. You can install lighting that's more efficient. You get the same or better quality light more efficiently using less energy. Same on the heating side with the thermostat. Have the equipment do the work.
So you're not talking about making a sacrifice, basically.
That's the part I like. If you want to make sacrifices, that's great. And a lot of people do. But a lot of people don't. They don't want to put on a sweater. So you can still save a lot of energy, using the right equipment, using energy-efficient appliances and, mm-hmm. and devices.
So just as an example, what's the payback time on a one of those programmable thermostats? Less than a year?
Oh, I don't know the number,
but
it's inexpensive and it saves a lot of energy. I would say it's probably on the order of weeks or months if you use it.
Yeah. So that's big and it's real money.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to turn to Bob Breen, who's with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and I guess you're originally from the interior region.
Yeah, I grew up in the Tanner Cross Toke area where it's severely cold in the wintertime, so I have a rare appreciation for energy conservation.
That's about as cold as it gets up there, yeah.
Yeah, very, very cold.
What's the main heating up there? Is it
primarily in the interior, it's wood heat or diesel fuel. And it still seems to be the predominant heat source these days. And I think for the most part in Bush, Alaska, that's predominant heat source is still heating fuel.
Yeah, which is about the most expensive you can get. I mean, folks who can get natural gas or low-cost electricity are not using heating fuel these days.
That's correct.
So the HFC had this program, which has got to be pretty unique in the nation, where folks can hire somebody to do an energy audit, find out how they could improve the energy efficiency of their home, and then get a grant to help support that. Could you just sort of give us the overview of how that works and how people can access it?
Well, the program you're referring to, Charles, is the Home Energy Rebate Program, and it's one that we implemented in the state years ago, but we didn't have a lot of money to put into the program, and it kind of went dormant for a number of years. And then more recently, in 2008, the legislature made an appropriation for two programs to work hand in glove. One is the weatherization program, which is for low-income families, low- to middle-income families. And then the home energy rebate program is not income-oriented. It's designed for anybody that wants to use the program. Over the years, we've developed a software called AK Warm or AcWarm, and it is the home energy rating software that is used by all of the home energy raters that we have trained over the years in the state. We now have 73 of them. And they all are experts at using the AK Warm software when going into a home to do an analysis of how the home performs. The home energy rebate program is based upon a pre-home energy rating and a post-home energy rating after the home fixes are done. So the difference in performance of the home is what your rebate is based upon. And as I said, in 08, the legislature put a significant amount of money into the home energy rebate program. And what it does is it provides an incentive for the consumer to tighten up their home, to make it more energy conservative. And the reward for that is basically to be rebated a certain amount of money based on the amount number of points improved between the pre and the post rating. Mentioned earlier, more directly to your question about energy savings, we're seeing anywhere between 20% to 30% savings on these fixes in these homes statewide. ACWRM has really allowed us an opportunity to measure performance in homes. Prior to probably about 5 or 6 years ago, we knew that homes were performing better, that people were saving money, but we didn't know the exact measurements. Mm-hmm. However, this rating software that we've developed really allows us a tool to measure the savings. And so we can, with confidence, say that we're hitting the mark absolutely between 20% and 30%.
Wow.
So 3.5 year payback on your investment.
Well, and the payback on your investment, but then also the state is contributing to actually doing the improvements up to some, what's the most you can get?
Well, potentially you can get up to a $10,000 rebate.
Wow.
So based on
how much you spend and how much improvement you get.
Exactly. It's a combination of the two. Interestingly enough, when we first started the program, a lot of people said, wow, I'd really love to go in and replace my windows. But interestingly enough, replacement of windows doesn't get you the points that you think you might get. The items that really garner you lots of points are furnace replacement, because we now have very efficient furnaces compared to furnaces that were built 10 years ago.
So 90%+ efficient.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very good furnaces these days. And out in the bush, there are heating systems like the monitor stoves. They're very efficient. The other item is adding insulation. And then the third item is air sealing. Those are really the three big ticket items that will garner will get you a lot of points in the rebate program. Windows are nice if you have a nice view, but you really don't get a significant benefit back from window replacement.
Cost benefit ratio, you're looking at it from kind of a business standpoint of where's the money going out?
Absolutely. And the beauty of the rating, the ACWRM rating, is it will actually give you a prioritized list as a consumer. Once that home energy rater comes into your home, does a rating, they'll print out a sheet that will give you a list of your top 10 items that will give you the highest energy savings. So it really is then up to the consumer as to how far they want to go in retrofitting their home.
Mm-hmm. And then you get the rater to come back, check, make sure you've done the work, and can then get a check from HSC to reimburse you for some or all of it.
Absolutely. The one other element, which is a real popular element with the home builders around the state, is if a new home is built to 5-star+ specification, which is real nice.
That's the best there is.
Very good mm-hmm. home. There is an automatic rebate of $7,500 to the consumer that buys that home.
Wow.
And so what it has done is it has created a consumer awareness so that if they know this is out there, they want to go the extra step and have a little better home built. For the building industry, it's a great marketing tool. They can advertise that they build a 5-star+. And what it has done is it has elevated the quality of construction for homes statewide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice element for the building industry.
And how can listeners get more information or apply?
Well, they can go on to our website, which is www.ahfc.us. Or we have another website, which is our call center, which is www.akrebate.com. Or they can call 1-877-257-3228. On our website, we have a ton of information. So if folks have access to the internet, please go on to that ahfc.us website, and it will give you a whole menu of program details and also question and answer on typical questions that
right.
we get on the program.
So you could probably almost just Google AHFC, and it'll probably take you right to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm getting some nods. Well, I'd like to invite another guest onto the show this morning. Jolene John is on the phone with us just for a little while. And I contacted Jolene because she's with Rural Cap. She's from Tuxuk Bay. And I just wanted to talk about what high energy costs mean right now in rural Alaska. Jolene, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you.
So for those of us who live in Anchorage or on the rail belt, we're used to paying maybe, you know, $4 a gallon for gas and complaining about it. But gas out in the village is way more than that these days, isn't it?
Absolutely is. I actually spoke with my family back at Tuxuk Bay this morning to confirm exactly what their rates are today and talk about high. Right now it's $7.94 a gallon for gasoline alone and almost $7.70 for heating fuel. But I also am aware that other more remote locations are paying way more than what Tuxuk rates are today.
It seems, and these are communities where there's a lot of folks living subsistence lifestyle. There's not a lot of cash going around. It's hard to imagine people can even afford to pay for energy at those prices.
Absolutely. And in the home, it's going to, of course, depend on how large of a home that you have. But I spoke to my cousin, who's the person working at the gas station, and he sees people come by, purchase about 5 to 10 gallons that only lasts them between 3 to 5 days. You imagine someone going back to the gas station 7 times a month, and you easily fork out over $500-$600 just to heat your home.
Wow. So how's that affecting people's lives and ability to even stay in the village?
Well, of course, I've heard people leave the village for the city, and of course, they face challenges just the same. But for those that remain in the village, my family out in Tuxuk Bay, they make do by trying to balance all their costs. But unfortunately, you hear about families who are having tougher times and having to do without heating fuel and doing the alternate, which is also costly and not safe for the family, and that is turning on the oven just to warm the space they're living in.
Right, and which is using energy as well, but maybe it's the energy you happen to have at the moment, right?
Yes, exactly. And there's no win-win in that kind of situation, and families are having to pay for a lot of things. And I had heard you talk about weatherization. In fact, my parents, who are in town for the convention, spoke about the importance of applying for weatherization early next year, and it's absolutely a benefit for the families who are having a hard time, you know, trying to keep their home warm. And, you know, weatherization really does a lot for families who have challenging times financially.
Right. So Rural Cap does that work, and how do people find out about it and get access to that?
We definitely work through tribal facilities, tribal council offices, and or city offices if we need to, and people can apply with the paperwork that's available there.
Is there much of a lead time, or how long does it take to get the work done?
I'm not very familiar with it. I don't work within that department,
I'm
new with Rural Cap. I'm more on the energy and environmental division.
Okay. Do you feel that it seems to me, when I've been in rural Alaska, a lot of homes are older and maybe were not built with energy efficiency in mind. Maybe when energy was a bit cheaper than it is now. So is that a correct perception, that maybe there's a lot of gain to be had from weatherization in a lot of different communities?
Yes, and with the deterioration going on in the homes and people, they literally were given prefabricated homes, or homes that were, you know, constructed with very inexpensive things, and they're trying to stretch the dollars to build more homes. But on the other hand, in the long run, of course, our families are having to pay for all the inefficiencies that they get. Although, yes, they're grateful and it's important that we continue to receive these benefits. But I think there needs to be a time where all these programs come together and really talk about what is really going to benefit the rural resident who eventually gets this home and has to maintain it for, you know, their family. I mean, unfortunately, everything is so expensive, from, you know, trying to travel to buying your meal for the day and so on and so forth. I mean, we have to do something to try to make it sustainable for our village residents to have, you know, at least some kind of energy cost savings.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks, Jolene, and that's what we're going to talk about for the rest of the hour with my experts in the studio, is the programs and the resources that people can get access to, and you've done a great job of putting it in perspective. So,
well,
thanks
very
much
for
being with
us. Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting us. Have a good day.
You bet. So we're interested in your questions and comments as well. The phone number here, statewide, toll-free number, is 1-800-478-8255. If you're within Anchorage, you can call 550-8422. And the email, I actually gave the wrong email address earlier. The email is talk@alaskapublic.org, talk@alaskapublic.org. The show is Talk of Alaska. My name is Charles Wolforth, sitting in for Steve Heimel. My guests are Sean Scaling from the Alaska Energy Authority and Bob Breen from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We have a few emails that I'd like to answer. This person is asking, a setback thermostat, is that the same as a programmable thermostat? Answer to that, I think, is yes, right?
That's right. That's the same.
So just a different term for the same thing. A comment about the HFC rebate timing. You sign up, and this is for you, Bob. If you sign up for this, you get your audit done. Your house has been checked out. You now have a certain time period to get the work done. If you don't get it done, then you're not going to get paid back, right?
That's correct. Basically, the way it works is we have a call center, which is that 1-877-257-3228. When a person is ready to participate in the program, they call the call center, they get on a waiting list. The people on that waiting list are dispatched to home energy raters who come in and do your home energy rating. Once you have that pre-rating done, you have 18 months to get the fixes done on your home. And then the rater comes back in and does the post, and then the comparison results in your rebate. We usually call people at their 12-month mark. We understand that the construction season is cyclic, so you might wait the winter and have the work done in the springtime. So that's why we picked an 18-month window for a consumer to get their fixes done. If for some reason the consumer can't get their fixes done in 18 months, they can give us a call, get back on the list, and their clock starts again. But, you know, there are things in life that we can't predict. If you have a medical emergency, or if there's, let's say, a family member is dispatched to another destination through the military or something like that, we use the 18 months to accommodate that, but people can get back on the list once if they have problems with getting it done in 18 months.
I see. But the homeowner essentially is fronting the cost. They're hiring the contractor to do the audit and then to do the work. So if they don't get their finish within 18 months, they won't be able to be compensated for that work that's been done, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Sean, I'm interested. We heard from Jolene about what's going on in rural Alaska. Are there some of these things that you're, some of these efficiencies that you're talking about that are more relevant to rural Alaska than urban Alaska? It seems like the program Bob's talking about is sort of relevant everywhere, because that's getting your house up to speed and mm-hmm. the weatherization and so on.
Yeah, well, Alaska Energy Authority actually works mostly in rural Alaska through some of our more commonly known programs, helping build and make more efficient the actual power plants in the villages. We also have a program called the Village Energy Efficiency Program, and that is for public buildings. It's essentially financial assistance, it's more assistance in terms of improving public facilities so that they operate more energy efficiently. That program's been going on for some years with big success. One thing I'll note is that energy prices are higher in rural Alaska, and you mentioned something about it costing a lot to work in rural Alaska or to make these improvements. But the interesting thing is the cost of energy is so much higher that we end up seeing payback periods that are the same as urban Alaska. You know, it does cost more to install the equipment, new boilers or insulation or whatever, but it's also saving money at such a faster rate that it ends up being almost equal, I find.
Mm-hmm.
So that program's been really successful over the last bunch of years. We have a resource on the web right now, akenergyefficiencymap.org. It's a GIS, a geographic map of Alaska. And you mm-hmm. can
yeah, and we have that linked at alaskapublic.org if people are interested in finding that.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect. So you can kind of zoom in and see what's happened around Alaska. There's a dot on every community that's where things have happened, and if you zoom into the community, it'll give you an aerial view of the buildings, and then you can zoom into that building and see what was done in that building. So it's actually, and the other neat thing you can do there is actually post your own story, and we're encouraging folks to do that. It's kind of a new feature, and I think it's up and running right now. So you can post your own story. Click on the building, on your home, on wherever the new feature is, and tell your story. Let people know, and you can go shopping on there as well for ideas from other folks.
All right, I'd like to go to a caller from Bethel who had a question. Oh, I'm sorry. We dropped that call. Heather from Anchorage, did you have a question or comment?
Hi, Charles. Yes, I'm one of those who could make a testimony. I live in a condo, and I had an energy audit, as did many of my neighbors. And we would like to have the whole building, but it was restricted, of course, to owner-occupied. And because some of the condos are not, it didn't pay for all of us. What was really great when we did it a couple of years ago is that between the rebate and the fact that that particular year you could take a $1,500 credit on your income taxes, basically it was a wash. I ended up paying a couple of dollars, practically nothing. But the more important thing is about 6 months ago, I can't be exactly sure, ICER came out with a report on the value of the program. If you haven't read it, you really should, because not only does it talk about energy savings, which of course is the primary goal, it talks about the number of jobs created and basically the economic benefit of the program. And I thought it was so impressive that I talked to Mead Treadwell about it and said this ought to be expanded to businesses and rental units, not just because it saves energy, but also because of all the other economic benefits that go along with it. So I recommend that report to people, and this program's great.
Yes, thanks, Heather. And I kind of noticed that too, that there was a lot of small construction companies that were getting work during a real down time period when that program came into effect. It came out basically right when the crash took place. Mm-hmm. Bob, how much money has been put into that, and sort of have you seen that economic impact that Heather was talking about?
We have. Since 2008, in the Home Energy Rebate Program, that total budget for that is $217.5 million. But when we started that program in 2008, it was really when jobs were at a downturn, and we felt comfortable that we could really talk about jobs retained. And we heard back from a lot of the people in the building industry that they were able to keep crews on and stay specialized in this energy conservation work in addition to building new homes. And rather than laying their workforce off, they were able to keep their workforce on. The study that was mentioned by the lady that just called in fact, we have that on our website. So if consumers out there are interested in reading the details of that study, if they just go to the AHFC website, we have that study online.
Okay, great. So we have Tim back from Bethel. Tim, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I do. I've been out here building for about 35 years. I used to build these small, very efficient, affordable houses that were always referred to as Smurf houses. And over the time, I've migrated into this building a steel frame house out of square steel tubing. And I've kind of come up with now I'm burying them down in the ground. Not totally buried, but they're all down in the ground. And believe me, it is so much cheaper to live in the ground than it is to live above ground. If you take the most efficient house that we can build on the planet above ground like they build everything here and turn the heat off for a day or two, you're going to be frozen solid. If you build a house down in the ground like I'm building, turn the heat off, you're going to stay about 31 degrees, nothing freezes, and you can survive. And it's much, much more affordable to build in the ground than it is to build above the ground. So the way I see it, this housing industry that's developed over the last 35 years that I've been building out here has basically been building the same house with a different vapor barrier now, and it lost its appeal when fuel went over $3.50 a gallon. And now that we're at $6.50, we really need to be looking for a different type of house. This house above the ground, when we're at $10 a gallon, my God, who's going to pay to keep us all out here?
Yeah, that's
it. We started a new industry building houses that people can actually afford and actually afford to heat using the heat of the earth. We'd be a mile ahead of where we're at right now.
You've rediscovered very old technology. You know, the Inupiaq people lived in sod houses, which were underground, and they heated with a single seal oil lamp, and they were able to get undressed indoors and be warm enough, and then when they moved above ground, they needed a lot more energy. I guess to turn to Sean Scaling, is there, technology and new ideas, is there a way that those are being passed around? Is that part of what you're doing?
Yeah, actually, it's Back to the Future. It is an interesting concept. Cold Climate Housing Research Center in Fairbanks is doing a lot of kind of cutting-edge research on cold climate living and structures and houses. So they've got a lot of really good resources. Another area of advancement is Alaska Energy Authority has what we call the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, and we're in the process of issuing some grants right now to applicants. And that's it's broad on energy, so it's energy production, renewable energy. It's basically testing the waters for stuff that isn't commercial yet but can be within 5 years. And there were several energy efficiency applicants kind of testing new things, shutters for windows in the extreme cold interior, things like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tim, thanks for calling. That was a good point, and I appreciate your being on the air with us.
Well, into the future, I would definitely like to pursue this concept with people to see if we're going to be able to make it available to be able to live in the bush. I mean, we really need to be altering what we've been doing out here because it ain't going to happen the way we've been doing it anymore.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks for being with us. And we're going to take a break now, but stay with us. We'll continue talking about energy efficiency as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports, faa.gov/go/flyalaska, or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. Every day, over 4,000 infants and toddlers go to sleep in child care programs across Alaska in unsafe cribs. The Alaska Community Foundation is partnering with THREAD to replace unsafe cribs in licensed child care programs across Alaska with new safe cribs. To help, donate today, and the Alaska Community Foundation will provide a one-to-one match of your donation. To donate, visit alaskacf.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Community Foundation.
We're back. It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, filling in for Steve Heimel. Our topic is energy efficiency, and in the studio with me today are Sean Scaling from the Alaska Energy Authority and Bob Breen from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And we're interested in your calls, comments, and questions, which you can get into me by phone statewide, toll-free, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage, 550-8422. And email also works well. It's the email address is talk@alaskapublic.org. If you go to alaskapublic.org, you can also find our show online and some links to some of the things we're talking about. So I invite you to do that. And now I'd like to turn to Stan, who's calling from Juneau. Stan?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I had RuralCap do some work on my mobile home. They just completed it here about a month ago. They sealed around the windows, and as far as I can tell, they did a good job there. But the main complaint that I had that I showed the guy that came out initially was some air leaks around the doors, quite a bit of air leakage there. The doors, the frames themselves are not perfectly square, so there's some room and air leakage there. And they did not have fixed one of those. They're still leaking. I still have rags stuffed in my door to prevent air filtration of cold air. I called them back to look at that and some other minor windows around the glass on the windows themselves, and I was told by them that, well, there's really nothing we can do about that. And I don't think that's right. I think that they may have only done 50% or less of the problem, and they're not saving me that much money.
Okay. Stan, you've got a terrible phone line, so we're going to let you go and try to get an answer to the question, at least in terms of quality control and the work that's done. Let me turn to Bob Breen about that. How do you make sure that the work that's done is actually done right?
Well, we are fairly rigorous about doing field monitoring, and if in the case of this individual in Juneau the work was unsatisfactory, certainly if he could give us a call at AHFC, our front desk number is 338-6100. We will be in touch with the contractor that does weatherization in that area, and we will get you a call back and have someone come back out and look at that. But we have about 18 contractors that we use statewide. We use the regional housing authorities as well as four other weatherization contractors statewide, and they are RuralCap, Alaska Community Development Corporation, Tanana Chiefs Conference, and Interior Weatherization. So we run that program through contractors. We also require them to do a blower door test on the house before they do the work so that they have an idea about what the best fixes are, similar to the rebate program, but it's all about tightness of the home and energy efficiency. But in the weatherization program, when you're doing retrofit on older homes, it's almost more challenging than building new construction. So we find often that with permafrost and with ground movement, it's real easy for doors to get out of square, windows to get out of square, and a lot of times what's required is going in and jacking everything up, getting it all level before you do any fixes so that you can really do the air sealing properly. But for the gentleman that called in, if you want to give us a call at 338-6100, let us know your details for contacting you. We will talk to our contractor, and we'll have someone come out and take another look.
And maybe you could clarify the difference between the weatherization program and the rebate program, and how who's eligible for each of those programs and how they access that support.
The weatherization program really is income based. It is based on 100% of median income, and if you want to know whether or not you qualify for that program, please go on our website, and we have the income guidelines on our website, so you can get an idea which region you're in, how much money you can make, and be qualified for the program. But that one is based on income. It's been around for 30 years. I mean, it really started under the Carter administration. It was a result of the war on poverty. It started out, it was only funded with federal dollars. And for Alaska, there were income unit limits. So you were limited to $1,200 per home, and that included labor and materials.
That's not much.
Not much at all. So you can imagine by the time materials got to Kobuk, Alaska, you wouldn't have much left to put into the home. We made it work, though, in those days, and I was around in those days, one of the few people still around in government. But nowadays, we really got a nice infusion from the state of Alaska in 2008. And for bush Alaska, the per unit limit is $30,000. Mm. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but one of the difficulties in rural Alaska is logistics of getting materials to a location. Many of these contractors have to order their materials out of Seattle in April. They have to schedule a barge in advance. All of their materials are packed into connexes, and then they're shipped north. By the time they land in Alaska along the coast and other points along the way, they might not be able to start work until June or July on a home and try to wrap it up before freeze-up. So the cost of freight is huge. Just logistics on everything, bringing materials in, scheduling a barge in, offloading any kind of equipment that you might need for like a forklift or a backhoe or anything like that. It's very costly to get in, so we have a $30,000 limit in the bush, and our contractors are very good at hitting the mark with that number.
And I imagine with your income, median means basically anybody who makes less than sort of the average.
Yes.
In rural Alaska, I would imagine most people are using the weatherization program rather than the rebate program.
That's correct. I mean, because it's a subsistence-oriented lifestyle out there, we see more application of the weatherization program in the bush and more of an application of the rebate program in the rail belt where there are jobs mm-hmm. and employment and access.
And so with weatherization, someone, a trained person is going to come and do the work on your home. You're essentially not going to be doing it yourself, but they'll evaluate what needs to be done and come in and do it.
That's correct. In the more remote locations, I'll use RuralCap as an example, because we talked a little bit about them, but they are really good about bringing lead people in and creating local jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way for young people to learn new skills and learn more about the home that they may be living in or their grandparents may be living in. It's a way to really transfer some on-the-job training.
Right. And bring some money into that community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Sean Scaling, we have a question here from a listener via email that I think you probably could answer. He says, I'm wondering how the energy efficiency of 12-volt low-voltage lighting compares to incandescent, compact fluorescent, LED, etc. I have several 12-volt track lights in my house, and they produce a lot of heat, so that makes me think they might not be the greatest with regard to energy efficiency.
The writer's right on as far as heat goes. In fact, that's one of the rules of thumbs I was going to talk about is when you're watching for what's using a lot of energy, look for heat and look for cold. If it produces heat or cold, like a refrigerator for the cold, it's likely to be using more energy. So those are probably halogen-style lights, which is a form of an incandescent light. So it's like a regular light bulb, except they're a little bit more efficient. They're beautiful lights, generally, very good light quality. They do produce a lot of heat. In the wintertime, at least it's reducing your heat load, so it is adding something to the building. But there are LEDs now that replace that are now, we're, I think, finally over the hump of their LEDs are ready for prime time. They're still a little bit hard to find, but I'd be happy to take just a couple minutes on kind of tips and rules of thumb of purchasing LEDs.
Right. Well, when we first started with the compact fluorescents, I think people felt a little bit burned because you paid more and it was supposed to last forever, but a lot of them were low quality and they didn't really last that long.
Yeah.
So is it sort of the same situation of waiting for maturity of the technology or?
Yeah, there's a bit of that. I think we've learned enough through the compact fluorescent days that I think we're entering the LED days more rapidly. But some of the same things apply. I'd say look for known brands, for example, when you're purchasing them. And when you're purchasing, it keeps changing. Everybody always used to think, oh, I need a 60-watt bulb, I need a 40-watt bulb. Well, you don't really look for the wattage now. You have to look for what the light output you're looking for is. And most of them are pretty good about saying it's a 60-watt equivalent, for example. But so my couple of rules here are, first, know what color temperature you like. What do you like the lights warm, like an incandescent, warm and yellowish, or do you like them cool and blue? And that's a totally personal preference from what I can tell. And then choose one accordingly. And then on the LEDs, probably the next most important thing is go for the efficient ones. There's quite a range of efficiency, which is usually expressed in lumens per watt. In other words, how much light output do you get for the energy input? An incandescent is about 15 lumens per watt. Just for reference, a compact fluorescent, roughly 45. So big improvement. That's why we pushed them for some time. LEDs are now in the 40 to over 100 range, so there's still quite a spread. And the higher ones cost more generally. So look for, if you can find it, over 60. 80 is great. The hundreds are pretty expensive at this point, but the price keeps coming down. So those are a couple of tips on how to look for them. And most of the hardware stores now have them. They're fairly readily available. The highest quality, more expensive ones aren't very much on the shelf. They're generally the more cost-effective ones, the lower cost ones, I should say, not necessarily more cost-effective, that are more easy to find.
Got you. We've got a lot of questions, so we're going to try to run through them quickly here. But first, I want to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Kinnickarm Bridge would create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnickarm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority.
We're back on Talk of Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, sitting in for Steve Heimel. Our topic today is energy efficiency. And I've got guests here from Alaska Housing Finance and Alaska Energy Authority to take your questions. Now I'd like to turn to Benjamin, who's calling from NOATAC. Benjamin?
Yeah, good morning. Hey, I'm just looking for avenues as to other avenues in reference to making our houses more energy efficient. The houses that were built by Northwest Impact Housing Authority are about 15 years old, and windows are hard to open or broken, and tiles are coming out of the floor, and RealCap came up here a couple of years ago and did an EnergyWise program, trained people, and they were here for a couple of years. However, they did put the ceilings on the windows and stuff like that, and on the door. However, throughout the winter, I found out that the door wasn't properly sealed, and air was still coming in through the doorways. And I've got a broken wood stove. The window pane or the glass is broken, and I have to cover it with a piece of paper just to keep the air from going out. And, I'm just looking for other avenues that some of the rural communities might tap into in reference to making the houses more energy efficient. If the Northwest Impact Housing Authority can help us, maybe assist us in acquiring grants or IRA, help us acquire grants to make the houses more efficient. Is there a place that we can go to? I'm looking out, for things like that.
Okay. Well, let me turn to our experts here. And is there a way to get a second round, Attorney Bob Breen?
Yeah, one of our contractors up north there is Northwest Inupiat Housing Authority, and we do weatherization with them. So if the caller is in one of their units, which they call current assisted stock, typically they have money to do maintenance on those homes, and now they have weatherization funding. So if you qualify for weatherization, they would get you on the list. And one thing about our contractors is most of them have more work than they have money, so they're really strapped to get to everybody, and they try to get to people as quickly as they can. But we work very closely with Guy Adams there in Kotzebue with Northwest Inupiat Housing Authority. And I would suggest that you get in touch with them, and maybe they have NOATAC scheduled for weatherization soon.
Yeah, I've kind of written a letter regarding that to through the NOATAC IRA Council or through the IRA administration. I know that letter went to Guy Adams as of today. However, that's something we'd like to find out.
All right. Well, it sounds like, can they Can he contact AHFC as well in terms of getting back?
Absolutely. If you want to get a hold of us at AHFC, you can give us a call, or if you want to leave your number, we can get back with you and find out what the scheduling is for no attack and when the plan is to get in there and do more weatherization.
All right.
Yeah. At one point there, I had problems with my stove. I guess the sealant gasket blew out on my stove on top of my oil stove, and I had to burn wood for about 2 weeks until the North Virginia Impact Housing Authority came up here, and they charged me for everything. They charged me for the airfare. I guess they charged me for, I don't know what else they charged me, but it cost me like about 800 something bucks in order to pay for what they did up here at NOTEC, especially in this particular house here. So, you know, that, I don't know, whether it's privately owned or, you know, rent-to-owned kind of situation, or we're just renting, I don't know whether there plays any issue in reference to rent-to-own or just renting. You know, those are the things that we have to deal with. Otherwise, thank you very much, and I will try and certainly call AHFC and leave a number if I can. Other than that, I do appreciate the information.
Okay, thanks, Benjamin. Thanks for being with us. I'd like to now turn to another technical question. It's probably a good one for you, Sean. This is an email. Could you discuss geothermal ground source heat pumps? How does the electrical cost compare to the cost of oil and electricity for a boiler? Discuss the cost of electricity at 10 to 50 cents a kilowatt hour and oil that costs $4 to $8 a gallon. And then he goes on to ask, are there known grants for nonprofits and or homeowners for this type of alternative energy? I guess, first of all, what is he talking about for the rest of us?
Okay, great. So a ground source heat pump, it's a super question, is essentially a pump that will take heat out of the ground and turn it into warmer heat to heat your home. So it's basically you have some loops of pipe in the ground in proximity to your building, and it'll essentially suck heat out of where you think there probably isn't heat and turn it into energy. It is electrical intense, but it displaces diesel, whatever your heating fuel is. So it works best, most economically, where you have low cost of electricity and high cost of heating fuel. Think Southeast Alaska, any place with hydro, and in a warmer climate as well. The Emerging Energy Technology Fund that I talked about earlier does have one project coming up where we're testing ground source heat pumps in Fairbanks. They have been used there, but it's essentially kind of storing solar energy in the ground and then retrieving it in the winter when you need it. I don't have any specifics. I think there was a study done recently, and we're underway with a little bit more with Cold Climate Housing Research Center to study what areas of the state this actually does work, basically based on the price of electricity and the price of fuel. So certainly Southeast, Kodiak, it works well. There's also air source heat pumps that are kind of up and coming, and we're doing some research on that. Again, kind of sucking the heat out of the air, the ambient outside air, and putting it into the home. And that, again, works in the same kind of conditions.
It's a different story in every part of Alaska, isn't it? It's here in South Central, it's natural gas, and Southeast, it's hydro, and interior, it's kind of biofuel, and rural Alaska, it's whatever you can get. So it's you have to know a little bit about your local area.
Yeah, and you have to have warm enough ground temperatures. Mm-hmm. One interesting thing is, so I talked about air source heat pump and ground source heat pump. There's also water source heat pump, which the Seward Sea Life Center has now. They're basically taking water out of Resurrection Bay, which isn't that warm, of course, but they're pumping heat out of it, and they're saving thousands of gallons of heating fuel a year by turning that into heat to run their facility.
Interesting.
So that's a really great success story.
And here's a comment, which you may want to dive into or may not, but it came by email. The caller or the writer says, I'm glad to see you're doing the show, but I think a point that needs to be emphasized is that implementing energy efficiency is far more cost-effective way to produce energy than new energy production, whether by fossil fuels or renewable fuels. The programs that Sean and Barb are talking about are a great job and need to be expanded prior to larger sums of state money being used for energy production. Goes on to say, as an example, the state is now pushing a $6 billion plus hydroelectric dam, when for far less state money, could expand incentive programs and reduce demand, thus saving more energy than the dam will produce. How far can we get with energy efficiency? Can we really avoid building a Susitna Dam or the other projects that we're talking about?
Well, I think the caller has a great point that energy efficiency is very cost effective. It's something we should be doing an awful lot more of. We're seeing the residential and workplaces, despite the millions of dollars of investment, there's still so much more to do. So he's right on, he or she, on that point. And then, you know, Alaska Energy Authority, our mission is to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska. We're looking at everything. We're looking at renewables of all sorts, big hydro, little hydro, wind, geothermal, biomass, and efficiency, of course, is a big one. And then also just supply side efficiency, which is when you're generating electricity, do it and distribute it in a more efficient manner. And so essentially, we're kind of competing all of those against each other and trying to figure out what's the best. Remember, too, that efficiency measures, last anywhere from a few years to, 20 or 30 years. If you're, doing a whole new insulation on your house, it might last for the remainder of the life of that home. Hydro, the beauty behind hydro is generally it lasts, 100 years. So that's stably priced power.
Until somebody wants to take the dam out because of...
yeah. So yeah, it's...
Just teasing.
But it's stably priced power for a long time. And we don't know where fuel prices are going. So we're shooting for everything that's going to help.
We just have time for one quick question or half of a quick question. And we haven't talked about businesses. Sean, just in 30 seconds, can you tell us about what businesses can access?
Sure. For the with the stimulus money that came into the state, we set up a small privately owned business energy audit program. So unlike the home rebate program, it doesn't provide money for the actual measures, the actual improvements, but it does provide paid for or nearly completely paid for energy audit and an assessment of specific things you can do. That program we're retooling right now. We hope it'll come back shortly, and it's been a great tool for business owners that have taken advantage.
So they can access that through the Energy Authority, and we put the link to that on alaskapublic.org. I want to thank both my guests, Sean Scaling from Alaska Energy Authority, Bob Breen from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Jolene John was with us earlier from Rural Cap. I'm Charles Wolforth sitting in for Steve Heimel, and Dave Waldron did a great job, and I also thank Josh Edge.
Is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Breastfeeding leads to healthy babies and healthier mothers. Women who breastfeed are less likely to get breast or ovarian cancer, and babies get fewer ear infections, score higher on IQ tests, and are less likely to be obese as adults. The road to lifelong health begins with breastfeeding. Call 907-465-3100 if you have questions about breastfeeding. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services WIC program, an equal opportunity employer.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.